This week on the Dragzine podcast, Melanie Salemi stops by to talk about her radio win at Orlando, what it takes to make a radio operation work, and what they have going on at G-Force Race Cars. So pull those belts tight. Get ready to put it in the beams. The Dragzine podcast starts now. Welcome, everybody, to this week's episode of the Dragzine podcast. I'm your host, Senior Associate Editor Brian Wagner. Melanie Salemi stops by this week to talk about going to Orlando to the World Street Nationals and winning in her very first race in a radio versus the world car, and kind of how all that came together and what they've done as a team to make it happen, as well as her plans to, you know, race her other pro mod in the PD area this year and a whole lot more. So without further ado, let's get this drag racing party started. All right, my guest this week on the Dragzine podcast is Melanie Salemi. What's going on, Melanie?
Hey, how's it going, Brian?
Doing good, doing good. You kind of had a busy weekend this weekend.
Oh, man. Busy weekend, yes. Busy couple weeks leading up to it also. My guys in the shop, all the guys that work on our car, myself, family members, everything. Everything in life was put on hold for a little while just to get this car wrapped up for Eddie, and we made it. We gave ourselves a deadline, and we said we would be testing in Florida by Wednesday, and that's exactly what we were doing.
Yeah, it's very interesting to kind of lead in with that, because a lot of people don't realize what all goes into making one of these cars come together and happen. Even when you have all the best equipment and skilled people, it still takes a lot to make one of these things, you know, bolt it together and make it run.
Yeah, and definitely there's always something at the end of the day when you're like, oh shoot, we need that for tomorrow, and red label UPS charges are not my favorite thing.
Oh, no. I'm sure UPS just absolutely loves racers from all forms of motorsports, because it's like, oh, you need that bolt? That'll be $100, please.
Yeah, and every time Jim knows that he needs something and he wants it quick, he definitely hates walking into my office and telling me that I need to overnight something, because I always give him that look. How come you didn't tell me yesterday?
Yeah, exactly. And it's, you just have many mystical powers, but one of which isn't magically making parts appear on time, right?
Right. And I mean, our vendors are really awesome with working with us, even local people. You know, we can take things to our anodizer, you know, in the morning, and I can bring them a box of donuts and say, hey, can I have it by the afternoon? And they always come through for us. So we're super fortunate in that regard to have a lot of vendors that work with us and work around knowing that a lot of race car stuff for a build is last minute. So
yeah, even when you go through and plan for everything, you never know when you open up a box of parts if, you know, something wasn't shipped right or something wasn't machined right, then you got to, you know, figure out a solution. And it really hurts when it actually happens at the track and you find out at the last second there when you got to start getting stuff shipped to the track.
Yep, exactly. So, I mean, we didn't really have any big snags. There was a one weather delay that caused us to have to find some nuts and bolts somewhere else locally. But other than that, it was pretty smooth sailing, and everybody worked well together. And we actually even had a new guy that is starting here at the shop this week, and he joined in and gave us a hand. So that it all worked out really well. And I mean, I couldn't be happier to say that when we left here, we had everything ready to race, and when we got there, it was, I mean, John was there already. He was ready to put a tune-up in the car. We literally rolled the car out of the trailer and made an attempt at the racetrack. So it was all really good.
Yeah, it's the getting any new car shook down is always kind of an interesting process, and as you make the cars faster, there's a whole lot more you got to worry about and deal with, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I feel like we're kind of at an advantage only because we build the cars. The chassis is exactly the same as the car that I race in Pro Boost. I mean, the driveline's a little bit different in this car, but John and Jim are definitely up with what it takes to tune a screw blower and tune a radio car and stuff like that. So we just kind of took all of that and made a plan, and, you know, the plan worked, and we're super fortunate because it definitely could have went the other way and we could have struggled a little bit, but it came together perfectly. And what can I say? It is what it is. We did our homework, and I consulted with Mike Sawicki about driving with the screw blower, and he gave me some tips, and I just went with it.
Just jumped in the car and let go of the button and keep it off the walls, right?
That's right.
So,
although I can tell you that I was a little bit more attentive to what was going on in the car, only because I know that driving with the radial tire is a little bit different than driving with the big tire. And I was just trying to, like, take it all in and feel the difference between the one car versus the other car. So I kind of brought my driving back to, like, probably 4 years ago, to where I like, had to really, really, really concentrate and pay attention. And not that I don't in the Pro Mod car, but because I've made like 600 runs in that car, I'm accustomed to like every little thing that is different if something is not right, you know? So with it being a different experience in the radial car, I definitely was paying more attention to what was going on inside the car and how I felt driving it.
Oh yeah. It's, you know, the big tire car, I'm sure, is almost basic muscle memory at this point, sort of like how a professional baseball player swings a bat. And now you jump in this radial car, and I always like to get people's takes that have driven both. And yours is going to be, I think, an interesting one, since, you know, was this your first time driving something on radios like this? Was it just, you know, jump in and, you know, go, you know, how did that all kind of feel and work out for you?
Yeah, this was definitely my first time on anything other than the big tire. And I can tell you that I was like, not nervous to do it, but I knew that it was going to be a learning experience. So I had to go in with a different mindset, and I had to, like I said, I had to go back to 4 or 5 years ago when I started racing the Pro Mod car versus the dragster that I raced prior to that. And I just had to like learn how to feel the race car and learn how to experience something different again. The basic functions in the race car are exactly the same, other than the short burnout, which I am not a fan of. They like everything inside the cars, comparing the two of them, is exactly the same. So I felt comfortable in the car. With the body, the way that it is, it's a little bit higher. The windshield's a little different. Seeing is a little bit different. I mean, going down the racetrack was completely fine, but like towing around the pits and turning off the racetrack is all different because it's hard to see. And but we'll change that also. I mean, that's one of the things that I'm lucky about. You know, we have all the equipment and the guys in the shop that if I don't like something about the race car, I just tell them, and as long as funds are there to change things, we make things as best as we can for me in the car. So, really driving the two of them, the functions, they're exactly the same. The feeling driving both of them, completely different.
Yeah, that's, you know, it with the big tires, it's, you know, it's always been like that they're a little more forgiving, where the radial's a go or a no-go situation, and it when it goes, it's a quick go, and when it doesn't want to go, it's a quick no-go.
Right. Yeah, and I did get to experience that one time also. I think it was like the third run that we made. I let go of the button and the car just smoked the tires immediately, and it didn't leave the starting line. So that was a very weird feeling, because with the big tire, that doesn't happen. I mean, unless you have something really messed up, but usually the big tire shakes, where the small tire definitely doesn't shake. It spins.
Yeah, it just says, nope, I'm not doing that. And then you never know when it's going to decide it doesn't want to, when it wants to do that down track. So, you know, was it a lot more of a kind of like a razor thin kind of like feel with driving that car? I guess
I
as far as
don't
like did you feel like you were a lot more like it was a lot more on the razor's edge, or did it feel, you know, comfy like the big tire car, I guess?
Well, after I had made a handful of runs, I definitely was way more comfortable in the car. The first couple of times, you know, the seat angle's a little different and steering wheel's maybe in a little bit of a different spot, but I mean, majority of it is was all the same. So I felt fairly comfortable in the car. Just the feeling of the front end not picking up when you're leaving the line and the back of the car raising up, that was all just like a little bit of a different feeling. But I mean, not a bad feeling, it's just something different.
Yeah, in a radial tire car, when you start to see the top of the scoreboards, something bad's about to happen.
And I mean, with all of the electronics that we've been fortunate enough to acquire through Fuel Tech, we have the wheelie control. So hopefully the wheelies like that never ever happen.
Yeah, that's those always seem to come at the most inopportune times, and it really kind of separates some good drivers from great drivers on how they deal with it. And you can tell sometimes that, at least when you're standing trackside, how often someone's dealt with a wheelie, because they either bring it down gently or they're taking an oil pan and flattening it quickly.
Right.
Now, had you ever driven a, you know, did Purple Rain before ever have a screw blower on it? Was it just your first time with a screw blower?
This was also my first time with a screw blower. I've always had a Roots blower. On the Dragster, I had a Roots blower. On the Firebird, we have a Roots blower. And this was my first time with a screw blower. Definitely a little intimidating, I can tell you that. It never ever stops pulling. Once you go down the racetrack, you're on a ride. So I was aware that that was going to be like that. I was ready for it, so it wasn't anything like, oh my goodness, you know. But it's definitely a different animal than the Roots blower.
Animal is a great way to describe those. I always said if I drove a Pro Mod or anything like that, it would have to have a screw on it just because it is so rowdy, like whiskey drunk, angry rowdy.
That's definitely a good way to describe it. It's definitely cool. I'm not taking anything away from the Roots blower because I'm definitely going to go back to that, but that will be a bit of a change going back to the Roots blower after having the screw blower engine screaming in your face for 3.5 seconds.
Yeah, it's I always reference back to Tom Bailey talking about that, and he, you know, talked about that you're never quite ready the first time you get into one of those cars, because it's there and it's screaming, and it's you're trying to, you know, where other cars you're trying to pile power in, the screw blower you're trying to calm it down because it's just ready to rage and go crazy.
And Jim has always like been a super fan of the screw blower. Back in 2010, 2011, actually, maybe even before the 2009. I'm not exactly sure what year they started, but Mike Stawicki had the Firebird, and when I met John and Jim and Mike, they ran with the screw blower in the quarter mile, and I always thought that was really cool. And Jim has always been a fan of the screw blower, you know, and he's like, any chance we get to race the screw blower again, we're totally doing it. So once this all came about, like, Jim was super excited, and I was kind of like, oh man, I don't know if I want to have a screw blower yet, you know, because I really, really, really enjoy driving the Pro Mod car, but like once this all came to like the point where we were making plans and everything was on track, it got me excited as well. And then, you know, I kind of look and I say, okay, if that person can drive with a screw blower and that person can drive with a screw blower, there's no reason why I can't do it. So once I like set myself up to like feel okay with it it was game on.
Yeah, and the big thing again, like you said, it's comfort, whether it's, you know, in the car, it's how the car feels and getting used to driving it. And do you think being able to get comfortable quickly in the car also helped you succeed this past weekend?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I definitely have to like thank the guys in the shop for that, because lots of times in the past month, or I mean, even when we first started building this car, they would say, okay, hey, Melanie, you need to come out of the office and you need to come out to the shop and you need to sit in the car so we can place this and this and this, you know. They're always making sure that I'm super comfortable in whatever I'm driving. And if I'm not, they fix it. Something silly. I mean, I took the steering wheel out of my Firebird and put it in the Camaro just because I wanted to have the same steering wheel. Not that like a steering wheel, a brand new one, would be any different. But I felt like that was something that I needed to do, so I did it. And it worked. I mean, we just had some luck. We did have some luck. I can't say we didn't, but at the same time, when we had luck, we also were making good runs. So
Well, yeah, having the luck and having, you know, the preparedness come together at the same time is ultimately what kind of drives home the win. And kind of, you know, walk us through what it was like, you know, during eliminations. You know, you're in the field, you're going fast, the car's feeling good, you know, and then elimination rolls around, and you know, there wasn't a lot of slouches at that race. There's some pretty tough racers.
oh yeah, for sure. I mean, anybody that we were up against, there was definitely no room for error. Mark Mickey, first round. I mean, I knew that I needed to be good on the tree every single round. And that's something that I've really been trying to work on and trying to focus on, because at the beginning of the year, I for some reason was struggling with my lights, and it was kind of taking a toll on me a little bit. So I just kind of focused a little bit more and tried to stay as calm as I could. And my lights were fabulous. I mean, on average, I was 14 through eliminations, and that was a huge accomplishment for me with everything that was kind of thrown at me in one weekend, you know. So, second round, we had Mike Decker. Him and I were both 18 on the tree, and we were just lucky to go a little bit faster than him. The last time I raced him was in Virginia at the Shakedown when we did the big tire versus small tire. So it was, I guess it was my chance to to redeem myself and get the win over him, because he took the win over me on the last try. So after that, we were definitely fortunate enough to get a bye run, and my guys took it upon themselves to try to see where we could go with the tune-up. And we went 8.96 in 60 feet, and then it tried to lift the wheels up, so the wheelie control took over, and that was that. So set us up pretty good for the final round. I knew Stevie was like, I think, 9 on the tree in the semifinals, so I was like, oh, I guess I better step it up a little bit. And I was 7 on the tree, he was 47. We both went 358, and I was just a little bit quicker on the ET and the tree, so that granted me the win. But I mean, it wasn't without like, honestly, we don't have that many runs on the car, so John is like kind of not like guessing where he can go, but like trying to push it a little bit, because we knew we needed to go fast, we knew where we couldn't go, and we knew where he had been. So he had to kind of make a decision on where he wanted to be with his tune-up, and that all worked out great along with my light, and that was it. So
What was it like knowing that you won that race? Because I'm sure you could see the scoreboards rolling down the track, and like it's, you know, quite literally the Cinderella story there. What's it like when you're in the car knowing you just did what a lot of people struggle to do after years, and you just, you know, jumped in this car on Wednesday and said, "All right, let's do this thing."
well, I mean, like I said in one of my other interviews that I did earlier this week, I hadn't looked at the honestly, like I hadn't looked at the scoreboards all weekend. I don't know why. I mean, John always tells me what I run, but majority of the time I already know before he told me because I can see the scoreboard. But like all weekend I hadn't been looking at the scoreboard. During that run, I knew that Stevie wasn't beside me and I couldn't see him. So I was like fixated on that scoreboard and I saw the wind light come on. I saw the time and I was like super excited and nobody said anything on the radio. So, like, finally, by the time that I was like getting off of the racetrack, then John comes on the radio and he's like, you got it, you made him, you know? So that was kind of exciting, you know, because I knew that I had won, but like, I also knew that they were celebrating on the starting line, and I was trying to have like my own little celebration in the race car by myself.
Yeah, I could imagine what it's like inside that car, having seen that and, picking up the win and just being that elated and, knowing that you've done something like that, that, again, not a lot of people have been able to do.
Yeah, the craziest thing though is like when you win a race like that, there's not very many people at the end other than the person that you beat. So like Stevie's the first person that I like got excited about, and he probably wasn't so excited, but you know, I just wanted to like have a celebration, and he was definitely a good sport. He got out of his car smiling, and it was cool. I don't think that everybody would be like that, but it was nice to know that he was kind of aware of our success, and he was definitely a good sport about not winning the race.
Yeah, I think that speaks to his level of professionalism, and at the same time, it's definitely a big feather in the cap to have a win over Stevie, but then at the same time, that officially puts you in his crosshairs, which can make thing definitely make things interesting down the road when it comes time to line up against him.
Yeah, like I said a lot of times before, I mean, I don't really care who I'm racing as long as I get to do this, you know? I mean, it makes no difference if Stevie's in the other lane or heck, anybody. That part makes no difference to me. I'm more focused on my car going down the racetrack than who's in the other lane, you know? So I have to be ready to do whatever it takes to get the race car down the racetrack during eliminations and make quick decisions. And I mean, I rely on John and Jim and the rest of my crew to give me a great race car every single time. And there's not too many times that I can say that I get out at the end and I'm disappointed or whatever, you know? Obviously, it's not going to go down the racetrack every single time because if it is, I don't think you're pushing it hard enough. But like I said, it doesn't much matter who I'm racing. I try not to get too worked up, and if I'm feeling a little antsy in the race car, I just get on the radio and start talking about what we had for breakfast that morning or whatever, you know, to just clear my head. And my guys think it's pretty funny sometimes, actually. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely some people out there that I like beating more than others, but like I said, it doesn't much matter who's in the other lane.
Speaking from my perspective, sometimes hearing people's conversations on the radios, like from, the outside, not hearing the other side of the conversation can be very entertaining. So I could only imagine, what that would be like for sure, hearing those conversations.
When we got, I think I can't remember if it was when we were at the end of the racetrack or whatever, but Stevie was like, "Oh, we were saying this on the radio and we were saying that on the radio," and I was saying, "Oh yeah, well you should have been on our radios and heard what we were saying, you know." So it's kind of cool to know that we're not the only team that has fun on the radio.
couple years ago is actually at one of Tyler's races. I was helping with a speed video broadcast, and I was walking around the starting line, and the Beebe family was up there getting ready to make a hit, and for some reason their radios were on our speed video radio channel. So I started having fun with them, and it took them a minute to figure out where it was coming from, because I could see them and they couldn't see me. So I was messing with Matt on the radio, and Carrie Ann didn't know what to do. And you could tell that they were like, they wanted to laugh, but they're like, what's going on here? So it's kind of fun to hear, you know, hear those sides of the conversations. And it was interesting to be able to kind of just throw something in there and watch them kind of freak out for a minute.
Yeah, we always joke about that. I hope nobody can like tune into our conversation right now.
Yeah, and some of, you know, especially over the NASCAR side of things, that some of those conversations can get kind of dicey real quick, depending on what's going on.
Yeah, that's true.
So after driving this car, and you know, you've been in the pro mod for so long, is there anything that you think you're going to be able to pull that you learned from driving this car to help you in the pro mod, or you know, vice versa, or anything like that?
You know what, I never really thought about that, but like I said, all the functions that I perform in each car are exactly the same. The drive line, the quick drive, the Liberty, it's all the same, you know, and all of the buttons are in the same spots. And so, like, physically driving it, just, you know what, one of my biggest things, Jim said to me, he said, I want, like, this car to be exactly the same as the other car inside. Like, I want, if you don't like the way that the seat's angled, we're going to change that. We're going to pour a new seat for you. We're going to move the steering wheel forward, we'll change the angle of the throttle pedal, this and that and the other thing. And I said, you know what, maybe it's a good thing that it's a little bit different, because then I'll remember what car I'm in.
Oh, it's a very good point. Never really thought of that.
So, no, I mean, not that I'm going to forget, but that's just something to go on. I mean, maybe the way that the seat is in this car is better for driving with the small tire and being able to feel the way that the car's reacting to what's going on. I don't know. I mean, I don't really have that many runs to like make any real good decisions yet, but I don't know if, like, back to your original question, I don't know if there's anything that I can take from driving the radial car and bring it over to the pro mod car, because I don't know, like, I'm not trying to sound cocky or anything, but I don't know if there's anything different that I'd want to do with the pro mod car.
All right, on.
Or in the pro mod car.
It was just kind of just wondering, just because it is two different kind of animals, and if there was something that would, you know, you'd be able to use in either or that would be, you know, beneficial. But if, you know, they're still that close together in some aspects, I guess, you know, you roll with what you know, right?
Right. I mean, I wouldn't have been able to, I can tell you right now, I probably would not have been able to jump in that car without having 5 years of pro mod racing behind me. I mean, that, I've learned so much about race cars. I thought that I knew a lot about race cars before. Now I just, like, I know every aspect of that race car. And if I don't know something and I want to know, I ask and I get taught. You know, Jim always has no reservations with explaining things to me on how things work and what does what and how things function and what causes certain things to happen. And I think that because he does take the time and wants me to know all those kind of things, I think that that's a big part of some of our success too, because there's been times when things have happened and I go on the radio and I say, hey Jim, this just happened and I just did this to fix it, and he goes, okay, perfect, no problem, carry on, you know. So, and if I didn't know some of the things that he's taught me, I probably would have had to abort some runs or lose some rounds because of it. So,
and that kind of ties into something I was going to ask there too, is that having that kind of knowledge and learning on it, does that help the team tune on the car and make adjustments better, because you're able to, you understand what does what and you're able to give a lot more feedback than just it moved left. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, I can definitely tell you that I'm really good at telling John like what I felt, where things happened on the racetrack, or you know, if I had done something a little bit differently in the car, I can tell him, or and I'm always good at telling him whether it's good news or bad news, because even if I have bad news for him, that just helps us in the long run because that gives him some sense of why something might have happened on when he's looking at the data, you know. So I'm not somebody that's going to say, I didn't do that, or that didn't happen, or I don't know. I always like give as much information as I can. Although it's probably a good idea that I don't like build the engines or something like that, because that's just something like that probably weighs on drivers that do work on their own stuff, you know, like this happened, and then in the back of their mind, they're thinking, oh no, like something's happening to the engine, or this is going on, or that's going on. Where I'm never worried about those kind of things. I'm more worried about like events that have happened on the racetrack, or events that I've caused to happen as a driver.
Yeah, it makes sense that you're not necessarily as tied up into to some of the mechanical aspects and being
Right.
hyper focused on something that isn't might be not be an issue that you'd have to necessarily worry about as a driver.
Exactly.
Now that you've kind of, got your first radial race under your belt, I do believe you're the first female driver to ever win a radial versus the world event. Are you really excited and pumped to start hitting more events on this?
Yeah, I mean, our team is definitely excited to continue with the radials on this car for at least three more races. We'll go to the US Street Nationals at Bradenton in January, and then we'll do Lights Out and then the Sweet 16. And well, those are our plans. I mean, obviously, things change and whatever, but right now, those are our planned events that we're going to take this car to. And then after that, we'll get the Firebird back out and hit some PDRA races and see what else we can do. I mean, I can't tell you that like we're going to stop racing the radial car, or we're going to put big tires on it and race somewhere else or whatever, because like it's too new right now, you know, and we have a plan. We have somewhat of a schedule that we want to follow right now. But I mean, if something else bigger and better comes along, there's no reason for us to not do something different if it's conducive to our team, to better our team or whatever, you know. So we're super fortunate that with all the people involved in our team, Eddie Whalen, Mike Sawicki, Jim, John, all the guys at the shop, all of our sponsors, stuff like that. We are super, super, super fortunate that we're going to be able to take either of these cars and race them however we want, wherever we want, whenever we want. And we could have a screw blower, we could have a roots blower, we could have small tires, we could have big tires, we could do whatever we want with either of these cars. And that's what we're going to probably try to focus on for 2020, is just taking whatever car we think is going to be better for the rule set at whatever race and take it there. So right now, our main focus is going to be getting the car unloaded out of the trailer that's completely iced up from the trip back from Florida because it had to go through a snowstorm, and get it in here, get it cleaned up, because we're taking it to PRI to put it in the Liberty Gear booth, and we're gonna make it look like it's brand new again and take it there, then go to Florida, back to Bradenton, and those are our concrete plans for now. So after Bradenton, as long as everything's kosher and race car's cool and team's cool, we're going on to Ducks Race.
Now, I think it's going to be interesting to see how you guys kind of, deal with not necessarily lights out per se, but the Sweet 16 for the simple fact that you have like 10,000 qualifiers at that event and how you guys approach that and, what it takes, with a car like this to kind of keep it alive and how many hits you make, 'cause it's a whole different animal compared to some of the other radial races.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we are definitely used to going to races and testing the day before and then qualifying and then making eliminations. So with that many qualifiers, it's kind of just like the testing the day before, you know? So that aspect of it is not going to be much different than what we're used to because like there are sometimes we'd go to a PDRA race and we'd make six runs on test day. Not that we can do that anymore because they've changed the format, but I mean, there's lots of times that we made at least six runs in one day testing. So, and then qualified the next day, you know? So it's not like it's something that is unnormal to us to make that many runs before qualifying or eliminations.
I know some teams that never really experienced that before, and I never thought that, the way that you guys kind of approach the PDRA stuff, it would be that similar to it. But it's a different feel because it's like you said, it's testing, but it's testing that counts, I guess, is the best way to describe it.
Right. Yep, exactly. And actually, we were talking with Duck and his wife at the race in Florida, and that's kind of what they say, you know, she, they like to give that many because they want us to be on the racetrack that much, you know, and they want to have the best outcome that they can. And let's face it, you get better with every run that you make.
And kind of going off the PDRA, are you guys still planning on running the Purple Rain in the PDRA to chase a Pro Boost championship?
Yes, that's our immediate plans right now. Like I said though before, anything could happen and that could change. But for right now, yeah, we're set to run Pro Boost for next year with that car. And honestly, we could take it out tomorrow and run it because it's sitting there ready to go. So we'll definitely be ready for April for PDRA, and our plan right now is to carry on with the Firebird and see what we can do for the championship.
Yeah, so let's do some PDRA talk, and especially that car, because you've seen some success with that vehicle, winning various races, winning in the PDR. You won the Shakedown at Norwalk, 1 year with it. Are you guys going to make any big program changes there? Or is it just going to be more of refining what you have to chase that PDRA title?
Well, we're definitely going to have to do some work because if we want to be able to compete with the other combinations, we're definitely going to have to do something. But honestly, because we've been working on the stuff for the radial car, we've not necessarily put the Pro Boost car on the back burner at all. But that's something that we're going to have to make a plan with everybody involved and see what we want to do to make some improvements. I mean, typically in the winter we do a lot of dyno testing and stuff like that. So that's something that will come probably after we get back from PRI. We'll start focusing on what we need to do with that car and basically get it ready and have it sitting here waiting for March or April, sorry.
Yeah, again, with the experience level you guys have and being able to do that, it probably makes it a lot easier. It's going to make it easier at least for you to juggle the two cars, because the one's already, like a nice worn, well-fitting boot that, it's not going to take a lot of tinkering and hardcore figuring out like the radial car is.
Right. I mean, there are some things that we do need to do to it. I mean, although last year we did do like a full overhaul on it in the winter, so it's pretty good in that regard. With some of the different rules that PDRA has put in place, we're gonna have to do some upgrades. Not anything major. I mean, we did take that car and race at NHRA the year before, so it's not like we don't have all of those items in place. We're just gonna have to do a little bit of work to kind of update some things and get everything back on track. And you know, all your safety equipment needs to be sent out and recertified, and put my new seat belts and all that kind of stuff. So, it's not like we're gonna just sit idle with it. We'll work on it. We'll do whatever we want, you know, whatever we need to, whatever. It's just our whole race team right now is in like a perfect spot because there's like no pressure. There's a lot of happiness. There's a lot of like thankfulness. You know, I'm thankful that I get to drive the car. John's thankful that I can drive the car. Jim's thankful that the car works the way that it's intended to. And I mean, we're all thankful for Eddie being a partner in this with us. And I mean, Eddie's thankful that we treat his equipment with the utmost respect. And it's just everything that we've ever worked for is like coming into place. And it's got us in like this really awesome spot right now. So I really feel like without the pressure of all that kind of stuff, it's making things a lot easier for us.
And it's something to be said, I think, about having that level of comfort where you're having fun, where you're not, even when if things do get a little difficult, you're still able to have fun and it's not dragging you down and making it feel like too much of a job to actually do stuff with the cars.
Right. Yeah, and I mean there is no pressure for any of us. I mean, if Jim says, "Hey, no, listen, I can't get that finished." And I say, "Oh, but Jim, we really wanted to go to that race." Well, he'll say, "Okay, you know what? Let me think about it for a minute. Okay, I'll do whatever I can to get it done." And then he'll ask me, you know, why did you lift? And I'll explain to him, you know, this is why this happened. Oh, okay, cool. So like the comfort is there and there's no pressure. If he says we're not doing something, we're not doing something. And if I tell him I did something because of a reason that I didn't feel comfortable with, he's okay with that. So we all have to be okay with each other. And I mean, trust me, being with your family every single day, every waking minute, working with them, racing with them, living with them, sometimes it gets tough, but like we would not want to change a thing.
And kind of going off of that, with all the development that you guys have done with these cars, and you know, with G-Force, is this something where it's giving you guys like an extra kind of like prong of attack with having like basically now two house cars to really help customers with their vehicles and with future new builds you guys can kind of test stuff on?
Yeah, for sure. And we definitely do a lot of that. Like, a lot of our vendors and sponsors and stuff will ask us to try things with in our cars. And you know, we are always up for doing whatever testing we can. And that way, between John's business, Resolution Racing Services, and G-Force, we pass that along to our customers. And you know, we can say, hey, look, this piece really worked well on our race car, so now we're offering this to you to better your program or whatever, you know. So it all like kind of works well together. We do sell every single part that is on our cars. So if our car likes it and we like the product, we definitely try to sell it.
Yeah, and I think that definitely as far as from a customer standpoint, just it ties everything together because it shows that, you know, you're not just throwing stuff out there like, hey, we're, you know, as a customer, you're going to be the first one to try us. Let's see how it works out. It kind of lets you guys vet stuff, and then it puts your customers in a lot better position as well, because there's several cars you guys help tune on as well, correct?
Yeah. I mean, John definitely does a lot of tuning, and he's been going over to Australia to do some stuff over there with another screw blower car. And Jim does a lot of tuning. He tunes Paulo's car in Radio Versus the World, and they do. I mean, I guess there was a time where John did a lot more tuning, but he's kind of been fortunate enough to have a couple of really good customers that he's working with, and being more focused on their stuff too. You know, it's not just like he's got 25 different guys that he's tuning on one weekend, where he can go and just have one guy at the racetrack and be completely focused on that deal versus having a bunch of other cars to worry about at the same time. And then back to the cars. I mean, when we build a pro mod car, the chassis, the craftsmanship, everything that goes into that is no different than what goes into the cars that I drive. I mean, I can tell you that nothing is ever skimped on when we're finishing a race car. Sometimes, because I get to do all the financial stuff behind the scenes, I'm like, hey, it just took you guys like an extra 5 hours to do that, you know, and we're not getting paid for that. But that's like all part of what goes into making a G-Force car, because Jim's passion comes from wanting to have the best of the best, whether it is costing him money to do it or what. And I mean, the majority of our customers, once they get their cars, they see what craftsmanship has gone into in making one of these cars, and it never fails. I mean, we have multiple cars that we take out first weekend and they go to the final or they win a race. Or, I mean, when I won the Shakedown, we had delivered the guy's car to Norwalk that weekend, and he ended up in the final with me. So it's not something new to us to have success on the first outing, but that definitely comes with a lot of hard work and preservation and a lot of giving up other things to be able to do what we do.
And, you know, it's definitely, I remember at the Shakedown, like that whole event and kind of how that all played out that whole weekend. It's like the same thing when Paulo brought out his new car, just the level of craftsmanship that goes into these cars and what it takes. It all ties together to be able to have something that's well built, and it helps it do well that first time out, as well as responding to, you know, tuning adjustments and things like that, that kind of what makes success easier. Right.
Right. Yep. Absolutely. And I mean, when John and Jim get together on a new car and it's at the racetrack, they know every aspect of the race car, how the chassis works, how it's going to react to this or how it's going to react to that. So that's something that when you buy a G-Force race car, you get John and Jim for the first weekend that you go out, and that comes with buying the race car. So that's another added deal, you know, they'll be there to help you do whatever it takes to get the race car on the racetrack on the first outing.
Now that you've kind of, you got this radial race under your belt, and now you're kind of looking, you know, at the PDRA season, and, you know, you've got a lot, you know, all these things going on, you know, what are you really looking forward to coming up in 2020 for the racing year?
Well, I'm looking forward to definitely getting back in the radial car and learning a little bit more about that and making more runs. I can't say that I was like 100% comfortable, not to mention the racetrack at Orlando is super dark at night. So this is kind of like a whole bunch of different things kind of thrown at me at one time. So I'm definitely looking forward to getting back in the radial car, making more runs, and getting as comfortable as I can in that car. And after that, definitely can't wait to race the Firebird again because it has a special place in my heart for sure. But like I said, we just kind of have to go with the flow and let things fall into place and kind of see what happens, where things go, and well, it's hard to say. Like, I don't want to like say these are our concrete plans, you know, because things always change, and that's not it's not fair to say we're going to definitely do something when right now we don't know. Our plans are to go to the three more radial races and then Pro Mod race for some of the summer. Hey, heck, who knows? Maybe we'll even put both cars in the trailer one time and we'll race two classes. We'll see.
Yeah. And your rest of your crew is going, really, you really want to do that? Because it's, you know,
Yeah, we would definitely need to make sure all of our helpers were at the racetrack for that
yeah,
one.
because it's, you know, it's one thing to take care of one heads up car, but when you got two that are close together, require that much attention all the time, it's definitely a definitely all hands on deck, and everybody's doing something at some point.
As much as I would really like to do that, I'm sure John would say, I don't think
Yeah,
so.
that, yeah, they look and go like that. That's nice that you want to do that, but yeah,
That's
no,
nice. Yeah.
none.
Because he'd have to tune them. So, yeah, it's a good thought, but yeah, maybe, well, you never know. You never know.
It's one
We
of those.
could talk him into some pretty crazy things. So.
It's one of those things where at about, you know, probably Friday afternoon, you're going, man, this seemed like a really good idea at the time, and here we are.
Oh.
As long as everything's going okay, because I've seen some guys, some teams, like, you know, with the Galat cars, where when everything's right and it's minimal maintenance, you're fine. Then you walk into their pit and, you know, there's cylinder heads off cars and blowers taken apart that they're looking at each other going, was this really
What?
necessary?
Yeah.
And
Yep.
kind of looking off of that is, you know, what you mentioned, that you run the car in the NHRA before, and, you know, the NHRA's taken over Pro Mod essentially from the RPM Association. Do you guys see yourself ever jumping back into that pond and swimming around?
Yeah, we will for sure at some point. Definitely won't be beginning of this year. If we do decide to go over there, and I mean, we still have all of our NHRA stuff to put back on the car, because it's definitely different than all the stuff that we use for PDRA racing. But we do have all of that stuff still, and we'll definitely go back over there when the time is right and when we feel like we need to. I don't think at the beginning of the year it's going to be even an option for us. Not because we couldn't, but maybe because we're just not wanting to right now. We'll focus on the radial car, then we'll focus on some PDRA, and we'll see where that brings us. But yes, we definitely will go back there at some point. It just isn't in the near future.
Oh, I'm sure it's time related, because, like you mentioned, you know, the difference between running quarter and eighth mile in a Pro Mod especially is way different, because there's, you know, people ask, well, what's got to be changed? And usually the answer I hear is everything.
Yeah. Yep. I can tell you that I definitely love running quarter mile better than the eighth mile. Not that I don't like the eighth mile, but quarter mile Pro Mod racing is like the most bad thing ever.
Oh, it's a whole different level of intensity, 'cause I was up, you know, I was up at the World Cup, and, you know, there's a couple, you know, high-end radial cars that were running Outlaw versus Extreme, and those a door car coming through the traps at 250 miles an hour is something that's just, from my perspective, is absolutely amazing, awe-inspiring. I couldn't imagine being inside the car trying to wrestle that thing down the track going that quick and fast.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. When we raised the NHRA, it was kind of funny because like we had the legal setup for NHRA, and then after that we went back to the outlaw setup and went PDRA racing, and then we went to the shakedown and we went outlaw quarter mile racing, and like going from the legal quarter mile to the outlaw quarter mile is completely different also, and it was like one of my favorite memories was taking that car and winning that race and just making awesome runs every pass. It was like that's one of the best feelings of taking your outlaw car and running it in the
Is there a
quarter
lot of changes with the outlaw stuff even more of a typical quarter miles, or is it just a matter of, putting the big pulley on it and yanking all the weight out of it and just turning it loose?
mile. Definitely have to like change your gearing and stuff like that. But that's not my department, so I don't really have a lot to say on what we actually did. I know that we're constantly changing weights and stuff like that, just due to rules that are put in place for certain events, with the Outlaw PDRA stuff versus what I ran at the Shakedown in 2018. Not a lot different other than like fuel systems and gearing stuff, but I'm pretty sure the weights were pretty close to being the same also. So I mean, it wasn't a lot. It's not a lot to change from 8 mile to quarter mile, just your tune-up stuff basically.
Right on. Well, our time here on the Dragzine podcast is coming to an end, and it's time for me to give you the opportunity to do your best John Force impersonation and thank everybody and go off on a crazy tangent if you want and talk about your sponsors and whatnot. So, I'll turn the floor over to you to, so you can talk about where people can find you online, what you got going on next, and who you want to thank.
Oh, you can definitely follow us on Facebook. That's basically where I post all of our race updates from the track. I've been trying to be a little bit better at keeping my family and friends and fans updated as to when we're in the lanes, because I know everybody's busy and it's hard for everyone to keep an eye on live feeds constantly. So I'm gonna definitely try to be better at updating my Facebook page with that kind of stuff. All the awesome companies that have helped us out, not only to get us to where we are with the Firebird, but also working on putting this new car together and being part of the success. Definitely have to thank Eddie Whalen because he's been like a huge part of everything that we've done for a few years now, and it's all come together awesome. Aurora Bearing Company, Big Sky Motorsports, Boar Racing Products, CCMC Inc., Central Fire Protection, Clevite, DJ Safety, Flat Out Gaskets, Hammer Superchargers, Kinetic Engineering, LAT Oil, Liberty Gears, Mentor Motorsports, Mickey Thompson, Motorsports Unlimited, NGK Spark Plugs, Noonan Race Engineering, PST Drive Shafts, Quick Drive Racing, R&R Racing Products, Ramjet Racing Products, Ross Pistons, my dad, RS Performance Auto Service, Scott Jaren Paint, Strange Engineering, of course, and VP Fuels. Definitely without Mike Sawicki, Jim Salemi, and John Salemi, this venture would definitely not be possible. So, always have to give utmost thanks to those three guys for giving me the opportunity to wheel these cars, and hopefully we can just keep getting the job done.
Well, for sure, and definitely looking forward to seeing what you guys pull out this year. Just based on that first race alone, it definitely, I think, put everybody on notice. And looking forward to seeing you at the U.S. Street Nationals, and hopefully you guys will see how long you can go undefeated.
Oh, that would be awesome to get another win under our belt right away. That would be pretty cool.
Well, folks, make sure you check Melanie and her team out on social media and give them a like and a follow, and We will see you at the track soon.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
All right.
Well, that wraps up the show for this week. Thanks to Melanie for stopping by. And as always, may your reaction times be crisp and your win lights bright. Until next week, folks.